All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com, for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Mountain State Survival covers your basis for your planning, prepping, evacuation, bugging in, or bugging out needs. They carry anything from educational material, camping supplies, emergency services supplies, food, first aid, survival kit and equipment, shooting gear, survival gear, tactical gear. They carry it all. They got it in stock. Give Mountain State Survival a ring. That's mountain-state-survival.com. Get this type of supplies while you still can. 304-517-6935. Mountain State Survival is one of the only places that I know of currently that is still carrying the delicious Peak Refuel meal that is ready to eat. It's personally the only thing that I eat at this point whenever I go out camping, whenever we have any type of emergency or disaster situation. That is the meal that I stick with, and you can find that at mountain-state-survival.com. Use Wrecker5 for a 5% discount on your overall purchase. That's Rekkr5, mountain-state-survival.com.
This show on the Heroes Nation app. Heroes Nation is the Heroes Nation app you can download in the App Store. It's up and coming. They got a lot of cool information on there. That is the main backup site so far for the American Vindicta Show. We'll also have some stuff on there that won't be on YouTube. It won't be on Rumble. It'll either be only on the GSRadio.net, who is the host of the American Vindicta Show, or it will only be an exclusive for Heroes Nation. And with that, I mean, you know, stuff that we're doing with the cave exploration, with the archaeological stuff. I'm going to start getting into a lot of paranormal talks and, you know, coming at that from my law enforcement and Christian perspective, and be having guests on, and that will be exclusive to Heroes Nation. So make sure that you give them some love. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, for supporting me. God bless you, and have a good day.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to American Vindicta. Today we have on with us Mr. Chris Pinto. We are going to be talking about the ending of Title 42 on May 11th and the circumstances that have led up to the mass migration, immigration, invasion of America, as you would say. And we are going to talk about the repercussions of everything that goes forward. So, Chris, without further ado, thanks for being on the show. And you wanted to inform everybody about the, I guess you would say, secret mission from the Jesuits to invade America, if I'm correct, to invade America with mass migration that would cause chaos upon the people of America and our economy. Am I correct in saying that, or is there more to it?
Well, generally, I mean, there's certainly more to it. I would say, you know, not just the Jesuits, but really the Vatican and the Catholic bishops, the hierarchy of Rome. I also think it's important to make the distinction, which I've heard made by other researchers many times over, that the average Catholic person does not support anything like this. You know, so the average Catholic conservative in our country would not really support illegal immigration. But those who have these left-wing leanings towards socialism, just like anybody else, they tend to support it. But what I talk about on my radio program is the fact that this immigration warfare, which is what this is really called, goes back more than 100 years, goes back to the late 19th century, where we were warned about this by a Catholic priest named Father Charles Chiniquy. Chiniquy, who was a personal friend of Abraham Lincoln. He was actually a very famous man. In fact, I just did a radio show talking about this. And Chiniquy, when he converted to Protestantism, he eventually became a Protestant. But that was news that made the front page of the New York Times back in 1858, I think the year was. So he was very famous. He was a Canadian Catholic priest. He was known for the temperance movement, where he was opposing alcoholism and people getting drunk and this kind of thing and ruining their lives over alcohol. But then he came to America. He was the founder of St. Anne, Illinois, the town, the city, the village of St. Anne, which is still there. And he became the close friend of Abraham Lincoln before Lincoln became famous, before he became president. And so he had this ongoing relationship with Lincoln, and then he went to visit him several times after he was in the White House. And he actually warned Lincoln that there were plots to assassinate him, to kill him. There's a whole series of books written about this. In fact, I've got a couple here. Well, the one by Chiniquy is called 50 Years in the Church of Rome. That's one. Another one, which that's probably the most famous one. Most people talk about that. But the one I like to tell people about in addition to that is this one, which is called Rome's Responsibility for the Assassination of Abraham Lincoln by General Thomas Maley Harris. General Harris was a Union general during this, a brigadier general in the Union Army during the war, and he served under Abraham Lincoln. And he actually sat on the committee as one of the investigators investigating Lincoln's assassination. And he came to the same conclusion that Chiniquy did, and that is that the Vatican and Rome ultimately were responsible for the death of Lincoln, for the assassination. And that John Wilkes Booth and the other conspirators, they were all instruments, really, of the Vatican and the Jesuit order. The thing to remember about the Jesuits are that the Jesuits are an intelligence network. They're a spy network. They're like the CIA or the KGB. And that's not because I say so. Anybody could go online. If you were to go online and look up E. Howard Hunt, E. Howard Hunt was a very famous CIA agent during the Watergate era. And there's a documentary where E. Howard Hunt is being interviewed, and he's talking about the Catholic Church operating down with the CIA in Latin America after World War II. And he's talking about getting certain information from the Catholic hierarchy. And he says He says, we don't know how it is that the hierarchy gets their information, but he says, we've always said that the Jesuits form the most extensive intelligence network in the world. Okay. So that's acknowledged. If you look up E. Howard Hunt, he's one of the most famous CIA agents in the 20th century. But for him to say something like that, to acknowledge that, really just affirms what so many different history books would tell you about the Order, that they are a network of spies, assassins, and they're involved in covert activities in our country and around the world. But anyway, one of the things that Chinique warned about in the 1800s was that the Catholic bishops met and they had a plan to try and get control of America through mass immigration by having all of these Catholic immigrants come from different countries. Ireland was the principal country back then, but other countries in Europe. And this warning, by the way, is well known. Anybody can look this up. If you just even look up on Wikipedia, not that it's the most reliable source, but whether that or any source on Charles Chinique, he was known for warning Americans that the Vatican was going to try and get control of this country and use mass immigration to do it. Use what they call in Rome irredentism. Irredentism. One of the people that I just interviewed for our upcoming documentary, Dr. Ronald Cook. And Dr. Cook is from Northern Ireland. And he's from the Ulster area in Northern Ireland. Now, if you look up the situation in Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland was Protestant for several hundred years, going back to the time of William and Mary in the 1680s and 90s. And so it was predominantly Protestant, but the Vatican didn't like that because they didn't want these Protestant heretics in Ireland, because Pope wants all of Ireland to be Catholic. So in the 20th century, they began this movement to try and de-Protestantize or get rid of the English Protestants in Northern Ireland. So they started moving all of these Catholic immigrants into Northern Ireland to build up a Catholic population and then start demanding shared power with the Protestant government there. And that's what sparked all of the conflicts with what are called the Troubles, you know, the bombings, the radical agitation. Give us the power we want, or we're going to blow stuff up and cause riots and all this other kind of stuff. Kind of like
the IRA.
Yeah, the IRA, exactly. And Dr. Ian Paisley, who was like the leading minister in that country for many years, for decades. He always said that the Jesuits were behind the IRA, that they were the ones who were ultimately provoking and promoting this whole movement. But when I interviewed Dr. Cook and I was asking him about immigration into America and, you know, all of these Mexican Catholic immigrants coming in, I said, what do you think about this? And he said, what they are doing is just what they did in Northern Ireland. And he said they are using a method of warfare called irredentism, which is basically immigration warfare. You move a bunch of people into a country that you want to get control of, and then you use that foreign population to systematically take control of eventually everything.
Now, if I'm correct, the IRA was a communist, revolutionary communists. They believed in Marxism, Leninism. So if they were then propped up by the Vatican, would you say that the Vatican is also, I don't know if the word responsible is appropriate, but would you say that the Vatican then agrees to an extent with communism, helps the influencing of communism and the spread of it?
Oh yeah, there's no question, brother. No question at all. In fact, here in modern times, even though the Vatican has a reputation of supposedly opposing communism in the earlier part of the 20th century, in modern times, you've had official statements from Catholic leaders in Rome openly stating that the communist Chinese government is the most ideal form of government for the Catholic Church. They've openly said that. You can even find that headline on the news. But one of the things that we're going to show in our upcoming documentary on the history of Rome and Jesuitism in the United States is the development of socialism and communism in the 19th century, because a lot of people don't realize that even back then, it was the Jesuits who developed the term social justice through a Jesuit priest named Luigi Taparelli in 1843. That's where the term social justice comes from. People hear it all the time, but they don't know its origin. If you were to go to a dozen Jesuit websites, you'd see references to either social justice or justice this, justice that. They're even pushing now vaccine justice, trying to get everybody vaccinated around the globe. Okay, so that's their terminology. You also have then in the 1850s, the great Protestant leader of Germany, Otto von Bismarck, published in the newspapers back then that Karl Marx, who was still alive, was working with the Jesuit general, a guy named Peter von Becks, and that Marx and the Jesuits were basically working together to foment socialism in Europe. Now, because of that, Bismarck ends up throwing the Jesuits out of Germany. He expelled them. This is, again, this is not conspiracy theory. It's history. It's just it's history they don't teach anybody in the schools. But anybody can find it out. You don't have to take my word for it. It's very well known. It's fully documented. There are also a number of books that were written back in the 19th century where you had Christian ministers who were warning, like J.A. Wiley in 1881. Wiley, who wrote the great history of Protestantism back then, and he has a book called The Jesuits, Their Moral Maxims and Plots Against Kings, Princes, and Churches. And in that book, he says in 1881 that the Jesuits use communism as a weapon against countries they are trying to control. Okay? So this is in 1881. Prior to that, in 1860, you had Alexander Hislop, who was a very well-known minister. He wrote the book The Two Babylons, which many people are familiar with. But he also had another book called The Red Republic. The Red Republic. And in it, Hislop argued that the Jesuits and the papacy were developing socialism as a weapon against their enemies in the next generation. Now, of course, Hislop was big into teaching Bible prophecy, and so he relates the Vatican and the papacy and communism as being this scarlet-colored beast that shows up in the book of Revelation. You know, the woman riding the scarlet-colored beast, the woman being a picture of Rome, manipulating this communist world empire.
And scarlet being the color red.
Exactly. And Hislop made no bones about drawing the analogy that communism, which is represented by the color red, that that's the reason why. Because this is this, and when you study globalism, globalism is international communism. That's what
yes,
it is.
Absolutely.
And so here you got Hislop back in 1860. Remember, communism hadn't taken over anything yet. It hadn't gotten control of a country yet. You see what I'm saying? Marx published the Communist Manifesto 1848. So here you are in the 1860s. You're probably less than 20 years later, and you have Christian ministers, God-fearing people, who are exercising discernment, and they're warning people. There's a whole variety of ministers. I'm going to show them all in this upcoming film. Maybe not all of them, but many of them, hopefully. But just present the quotes to people so they can see that we had churchmen warning about this probably 50 to 70 years before communism actually got control of places like Russia and China and the North Korea. And, you know, we've seen this wave of communist takeovers and revolutions in the 20th century. But what people don't realize, I think, is that the groundwork for that was being laid back in the 1800s.
So the mid 1800s, like 40s to 70s, 80s.
Right.
That's going to be American Revolution, or excuse me, American Civil War. That's going to be the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, which I, looking back in history, I say is probably one of the biggest downfalls of America. The biggest uplifts and also one of the biggest downfalls, because that's when we sold the Constitution to bankers. I think what you're saying here is an interesting correlation, especially when we say communism, because, Chris, the problem with the word communism is that it's used so much that people don't actually understand what the rule of communism is. Communism, essentially, if you look back into old time Rome, that is recreating an empire. And the guy in charge, you know, either the pharaoh or the emperor, that is the head president of every communist country, because he is de facto law and everybody else has to serve under him. And isn't it interesting that in South America, the amount of communist countries, to include Mexico as well, and to include Cuba, that are all communist countries and they're all Catholic countries?
Yes. Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I've had two speakers that have drawn that. In fact, what was his name? Tim Kaufman, who's a former Catholic, now a Protestant evangelical. But he made that comment when I interviewed him. He said, you look at these countries that are being given over, like Venezuela, Cuba, these Latin American countries, they're being given over to socialism or communism at different levels. And yes, they're historically Catholic countries. And it's because the hierarchy basically controls those countries. And what we have to understand, I think, as English-speaking people, we have to understand that not all Catholics necessarily want their countries controlled by the Pope. And historically, Magna Carta was written, if you get the book Rome Behind the Great War, by John Kensett, who founded the Protestant Truth Society back in the late 19th century. But he argued that Rome was behind World War I. And he goes over the history of the West and how King John, back in 1214 AD, went and he met with the Pope's ambassador, a guy named Pandulf, and he took the crown off his head and he laid the crown at the feet of the Pope's ambassador, basically saying that the Pope will be able to control England through King John. Well, word of this got back to the leaders, the barons in England, and they were Englishmen. And the thing about Anglo-Saxon people is they don't like the idea of their country being controlled by a foreign leader. And so the barons, now this is 300 years before the Reformation, and they said, no, we don't want the Pope controlling our country. And they knew that the Pope wanted money. He wanted them to pay Peter's pence. And so this is why they got together with Archbishop Stephen Langton, and they wrote Magna Carta. And they included within it, no taxation without representation. Okay, that they were going to have representatives there with the king to prevent the king from fleecing them financially, economically, and sending their money down to the Pope in Rome. So this is why you've got Shakespeare at one point. He has a line in the play, King John, where it says that no Italian priest shall either tithe nor toll in England. So the English have always been very, very staunchly opposed to the idea of Romanism or popery controlling their country, even back when they were Catholic. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So it's not just because they became Protestant. The English Reformation goes on from there. And I think Magna Carta and then John Wycliffe, really laid the groundwork for the English Reformation that happened later on. You know, once Luther comes along and he nails his 95 Theses. But these principles were being argued hundreds of years before it happened. And you look at what's happening to us right now in our country. What's happening? We've got people, we've got agents who I argue really work for foreign powers. They work for the Vatican. They work for the European Union. They work for Mexico and China. But they're not really working for us. And they're taking our money and they're just giving billions and billions of dollars away, like to Ukraine and this conflict there and to all these different countries and causes all over the world. But they won't use those resources where they're really needed here in the United States. And this is it, what I see, the way I see it, just looking at this, you know, the span of history from Magna Carta in 1215 right up to the present day. In many ways, we're having the same struggle that our ancestors had centuries ago. Does that make sense?
Yes. So one thing that I want to tie together, I think it's interesting what you're saying about Catholics. Once again, I'm not anti-Catholic for the people who have, you know, Catholicism as the religion. That's your own religion. That's your deal. But I think you can draw parallels here to extremism and the Catholic Church, the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
You can draw a lot of parallels. Here, let's hear one. Popes Pius the sixth and seventh during the Nazi Germany time. In Nazi Germany, the Catholics lived in the south, the Protestants lived in the north, and even though when the vote for the Nazi Party and Adolf Hitler was not a majority by the southern Germany and the Catholics, eventually it was the Enabling Act of 1933 that saw a majority center party, Catholic party of Germans who gave all domestic powers to suppress political opponents to Adolf Hitler in the Nazi Party. And they were supported by that. And in fact, it was the Vatican who also was surrounded by fascist Italy, Catholic, communist Italy, that the Nazis went and said, hey, we want your permission before we begin Dachau and all the other concentration camps, and was granted permission. And it was also the Vatican who helped in the rat lines to then take all of the remaining Nazis and pushed them into various different places around the world. But one of the biggest places they sent them was South America, which was, Chris, at that point in time, was a Catholic-based religion country.
Right.
Brazil, Argentina, Peru.
Yeah.
So it's wow, what an interesting correlation. And now sitting in our doorstep on the U.S.-Mexican border, a Catholic country, by the way, ruled by a communist dictatorship, which they call a president, and they're pushing through these hordes of people potentially into our country. May 11th will be the first footstep of anywhere between 300,000 and 1.8 million people.
Mm.
Those are the estimates. And law enforcement has no idea what to do. They're panicking. I've been informed of a meeting where they are panicking. They don't know what to do. The Texas governor wants to shut down the border. They may have to shut down other means of transportation until they can export all the brand new Americans into America. Oh, by the way, we can't pay for them. It's going to kill our economy. 2030 is the end of Social Security, announces the Social Security Administration, about a month or two ago? We are going to run out of money for Social Security in 2030.
Well, of course. They're sending it all to Ukraine. But I didn't mean to interrupt. Now you're absolutely right. These connections that you're making with South America and Venezuela and that whole territory, that they smuggled the Nazis out of Europe through what they call the Vatican rat lines. There's even a documentary that I used to talk about years ago, but if you can still find it, they've almost scrubbed it entirely off the internet. But it is called The Last Refuge. And it was actually a short documentary done by Sam Donaldson, very mainstream journalist at the time. And he he sat down, interviewed the guys who had discovered this whole thing, and then interviewed one of the former OSS spies who admitted that, yes, the OSS, working with the Vatican and MI6 over in England, that they systematically smuggled some 60,000 Nazi war criminals out of Europe after the war. And many of them went down to South America and Venezuela and so on. But and why? Because that has been Rome's Jesuit territory. I mean, what we're dealing with on the southern border and into America, you look at the people they put in charge, like Mayorca and others, we're dealing with Latin American Jesuitism. That's what we're dealing with. That's why the current Pope, Bergoglio, is from Latin America, and the Jesuit general, Arturo Sosa, again, from Latin America. And what do they speak? They speak Spanish. Who was the founder of the Jesuit order? Ignatius Loyola, a Spaniard. And the reason they're speaking Spanish is because Spain invaded those territories and took them over. So there's this whole link to the very origins of Jesuitism, and they see themselves as the flagship order for the Catholic Church, even though they ultimately want to destroy historic Catholicism and they want to destroy entirely biblical Christianity. But yes, they want to get control of America. I think there's no question. But what people should understand is that the Jesuits have been on American soil for over 400 years. You had Jesuit missionaries here even before the English colonies, and they were trying to get control of this continent. Well, what happened was the Spanish Armada was destroyed in 1588. That was their great power, the Armada, because you had the Huguenots, the French Protestants, try to establish a colony down in Florida, in what is modern-day Jacksonville. And what happened was they were set upon by the Spanish Armada. They go in there, they defeat them. They defeated the Huguenots, unfortunately. And then they tried to forcibly convert the survivors, who said no, they wouldn't convert. So then they slaughtered them. They massacred them. And that's why you have down there Fort Matanzas. Fort Matanzas, the word Matanzas means massacres, because that's where they massacred the Protestants. You see what I'm saying? So because of the power of the Spanish Armada, the Protestant territories couldn't colonize the New World because they were intercepted and they were being blockaded and prevented. But then once the Armada was destroyed, that obstacle was out of the way, and that paved the way for England to come in and begin the English colonies.
I have a question for you. When you speak of Ukraine, 72% of Ukraine is Orthodoxy, 9% is Catholic, 2% is Protestant, 2% is other Christian, 3% is labeled as other, 10% consider themselves atheists, and then there's a gray line, 2% that doesn't know what they are. Is Eastern Orthodoxy Christianity the same as Catholicism? Is there a link to the Vatican? Because they seem to be similar, but they consider themselves to be very different.
Yeah, they do. They have very similar doctrines. I'm not as familiar with all of the doctrines of the Eastern Orthodox Church, but they are very similar, like their veneration of Mary, the icons to the various saints and so on. They have a lot of similarities just in terms of what they believe. But there is a historic enmity and hatred between the two churches that goes back centuries and centuries. And when I say hatred, that I believe that's a key element for what's going on in Ukraine right now, because the conflict is between Eastern Ukraine, which is generally Catholic, versus Western Ukraine, which is generally Catholic, versus the Eastern Ukraine, which is where you have the Russian Orthodox, even though they're all Ukrainians. But in the East, they are ethnic Russians who are members of the Orthodox Church.
Right. That whole Dnipro area, the Donbass region. And don't forget, that the Azov Battalion, the neo-Nazi link for the Azov Battalion, comes from the Kiev area.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if people don't know this, Ukraine at that point in time during World War II donated the most amount of manpower to the Nazi SS battalions.
Mm-hmm.
They had the largest amount of SS battalions out of the 33 different nations who donated troops. And so that's why you still see a very strong Naziistic, lifestyle almost. I mean, if you look at all the videos that is being showed from the Ukrainian troops, the Sieg Heil salute is all over the place. I've spoken to guys that are special operations who were over there during the very beginning of all this, and they were over there to try and actually rescue children for child trafficking, because that's one of Ukraine's like big moneymakers is child trafficking. And they said that Nazism everywhere, from the schools to the teenagers, the colleges, the mom and pop stores. They are still very much pro Adolf Hitler and the Nazi ideology, which is what we're funding, which is what the Catholic Church at one point in time was an approval of, even though Pius, I think it's 6th and 7th, didn't approve of it in the beginning. They ended up agreeing with it in the end.
Well, Pope Pius the 12th was Hitler's pope.
That's right.
Pius was Hitler's pope. And if you get the book, Hitler's Pope, Cornwell explains that it was Pacelli, who was the Cardinal Pacelli. He becomes Pius the 12th. He's the one who brokered the deal with Hitler. And they had the concordat between the Vatican and Hitler that got, as you mentioned earlier, the Catholic Center Party to give Hitler his absolute totalitarian power.
Right.
That was all through the Vatican. Okay. And this, let me give you a quote now that we show in one of our films, but you can find it in the book, The Secret History of the Jesuits, by Edmund Paris. Paris was a French journalist, and he quoted from a communique from the Vatican to the Spanish dictator Francisco Franco on the day of Hitler's death, when Hitler died. And the Vatican sent a message to Franco and said, quote, Adolf Hitler, son of the Catholic Church, died while defending Christianity. And they declared Hitler to be a martyr. Now, when I first read that in Edmund Paris's book, I thought, wow, that is heavy. And then I stumbled upon a debate with the late Dr. Ian Paisley. Paisley was a very, very prominent guy over in the UK and very involved in the politics over there, but he was a Protestant minister. He preached the gospel relentlessly, but he was also a staunch opponent of Rome. He was known for denouncing the Pope as the Antichrist back in, I think it was 1988 or 98, back when Pope John Paul II came to the European Union. And but Dr. Paisley quoted from Edmund Paris's work and quoted that particular quote in particular. And scholars over in Europe, Protestants, they know that, yes, of course, the Vatican was behind Hitler. Of course they were. It was the Vatican that first set up ghettos for the Jewish people. Jewish ghetto. You had a Jewish ghetto in Rome for 300 years, all the way until the year 1870. That's where the whole idea of the Jewish ghetto came from. It was the popes that made the Jews wear yellow badges to identify themselves. That didn't come from Hitler. Hitler got that from the popes. You see what I'm saying? So people who knew what was going on, and they knew that history, it's why at the end of World War II, Churchill and Charles de Gaulle said, we've just come to the end of our second 30 years war. The first 30 years war was a struggle against Rome. And so they knew that Rome was behind a lot of the conflict that was going on with World War I and World War II. And what Hitler was trying to do was to become the Holy Roman Emperor. That's why they called it the Third Reich. Because this is a reference to the whole idea of the Holy Roman Empire, and the emperor was the secular power that the Pope would control. So like when John Huss was burned at the stake, and then the Hussite Wars broke out, what happened was the Pope, Huss is burned at the stake, his followers are outraged, they have these uprisings, and then the Pope orders the Holy Roman Emperor to invade Bohemia and wipe out all the Hussites. You see what I'm saying? That was the construct of the Holy Roman Empire. So with the Vatican manipulating Hitler, it's the same relationship. You see what I'm saying? But it was happening in a much more covert manner.
So why is it that the Vatican now is trying to blend the three major religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam? Because you see the Vatican invading Protestant Christianity and trying to muddy the water constantly, but I don't pay attention to it too much, but I don't see the same type of manipulation for Islam as the Vatican does for Protestants. Why do you think that is, if you have an opinion on that?
Certainly. Rome's number one enemy is Protestantism. The whole purpose of the founding of the Jesuit order was to launch the Counter-Reformation, which they did in 1540. And so the Counter-Reformation is to overturn the Protestant Reformation. Now, for the average person, people say, okay, well, why should we care about that? Well, the Protestant Reformation brought in freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, the right to bear arms, private property protections, due process, castle doctrine, that you have the right to defend your home. As we're watching these ideas be systematically overturned, you know, as they're trying to overturn free speech by coming up with hate speech laws and saying, if you insult Islam, we're going to put you in jail and things like that. Or if you misgender somebody, you're not using the right pronoun and this kind of thing. These are all attacks on the fundamental principles of liberty that were won by both word and deed on the fields of battle by our Christian ancestors. And you see, what they don't teach in our schools anymore, brother, and this is it's why I made my film, The True Christian History of America, is that the principles of things like Magna Carta and free speech and publishing the Bible and reading the Bible, just having the freedom to read a Bible in your own language, these things weren't just declared by the reformers. They had to be fought for on the field of battle. I mean, Christian armies had to take up arms and go and fight wars for the freedom to preach the gospel. That's what the 30 Years' War was about. And what they've done is in the schools is they've just told everybody, oh, these wars of religion, back in, you know, the Catholics and the Protestants fighting, oh, we just don't need to even talk about that. And people don't realize those wars that were fought, they were fighting for all of the liberties that we take for granted today. It wasn't the American Revolution that defined those things. Those things were being defined all the way back in, you know, the 13th century. That's why no taxation without representation, that's Magna Carta. But they wrote it. But then the Pope and the King turned their back on it, and then the barons had to take up arms and go to war. They had to fight. You see what I'm saying? When Huss is burned at the stake, they kill a man for preaching the gospel, for preaching the word of God, and the Hussites, they were outraged. They took up arms. They fought. And then they published the four articles of Prague. The first article was the free preaching of Holy Scripture. You see what I'm saying? This is what's at stake with globalism, because the globalists, I believe globalism is an instrument of Jesuitism. And I don't just believe that, Doug, just because I happen to be studying the Jesuits right now, but because they themselves admit to it. Somebody sent me a link to a lecture at Georgetown University, which is a Jesuit university, where they had a professor there that they brought in. They said, well, we want this professor to give the history of the Jesuits. Okay. You go watch the lecture from this guy. We've got a link to it on our Facebook page. You watch the lecture from this guy, and he openly admits that the Jesuits are the ones who developed, they were the first to develop globalism. And so the lecture is called The Jesuits and Globalism. And he argues that the first 30 years war was the attempt by the order to bring in a globalist form of government because they were going to try and control all the countries of Europe. But he says, no, they were unsuccessful. They were defeated by Protestantism. And so that led to the birth of capitalism and the protection of the sovereignty, the national sovereignty of individual countries. And so that led to the Peace of Westphalia. That was the end of it. And what is called the Westphalian World Order. Now, how many people do you know who know what the Westphalian World Order was or is?
Probably very little.
Yeah. But that's, in contrast, the New World Order is really the removal of the Westphalian World Order. Because the Westphalian World Order acknowledges the sovereign national sovereignty of countries. Anybody can look this up. I mean, it's just basic history, but they don't teach it. So right now, open borders, right? Hey, we're going to open the borders and just flood everybody with all these migrants. That is the rejection of. In fact, when there's an article that I've quoted from on Tony Blair, because, you know, Tony Blair is a big-time globalist. And he worked with Bush, who was also a big-time globalist. And Blair is part of the World Economic Forum. He's still active there. And but back when he was Prime Minister of England, the English newspapers had an article at one point, and they said that experts are referring to Mr. Blair as the beginning of the end of the Westphalian World Order. So in other words, Blair, for some reason, which I don't completely understand right now, but I'm still piecing together the parts of the puzzle, but Blair really advanced the mass immigration of Muslims into England and so on. But Blair represented the idea of the beginning of the end of the sovereignty, national sovereignty of countries, countries in Europe, America, possibly all, probably all over the world, based on what they're planning to do. I mean, they want to have open borders for the entire planet. It appears. Now how they're going to manipulate this beyond where we're at today, I don't know. Right now, it just seems like they are using immigrants from these third world countries into the more developed countries to systematically take them over.
And it would appear that Donald Trump is the new Jan Hus, who is, you know, obviously a reformer in many ways. He's not an isolationist. He's a nationalist, believes in nations' rights and not open borders. Does in your summations, do you think Trump is an enemy of the Vatican, or is he a puppet like many claim?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, I've gone back and forth on that. I mean, Trump went to Fordham University. Fordham University is a Jesuit institution. At least two of his kids, Ivanka and, oh, who's the, not Don Jr., but his other son.
Eric
Trump. Both went to Georgetown University. Georgetown University, of course, a lot of people go to Georgetown University. I always tell people, just because somebody went to a Jesuit institution doesn't necessarily mean that they are a Jesuit. And I said that for years before Trump showed up, because I believe it's true. But many people are, you know, they're conditioned by the order and their way of thinking when they are in those institutions. But there's like 28 Jesuit colleges and universities in our country. But Georgetown is the most influential. I believe it's the most politically influential institution in our country, because it's at Georgetown that they train the spies for the CIA through the Edmund Walsh School of Foreign Service. But anybody can look that up. But where Trump is concerned, see, when Trump started running and he mentioned illegal immigration, which nobody else was talking about, and he's saying, you know, they're rapists and they're murderers and they're not sending us their best and this kind of thing. And he said, I'm sure some of them are very nice people. And he goes on and he's going after illegal immigration based on what I had studied up to that point, where, you know, in Islam, immigration warfare is the hijra. So they're, the globalists are using Islamic immigration jihad. And then irredentism, that's Rome's version of immigration warfare, they're using both. They're using irredentism and hijra, and they're flooding all of these countries and trying to take them over.
Brother, I'm going to have to stop you right there. We're about to run out of time. I want to have you back on so that we can get back into this. Because okay. we're just peeling off the second layer of this onion.
Yeah.
And I'll give you 2 minutes. What would you say is the most pressing thing that's going on right now that the Jesuits are trying? And where can people find all of your information at?
Well, I would say that, you know, to me, the number one issue, because it's the number one threat to the gospel, is the ecumenical movement, both theologically and politically. Theologically, because it denies that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and that no man comes unto the Father but by him, and that Christianity is the only true religion, which our ancestors had always believed. So ecumenism denies that and tries to blend Christianity in with Islam and Hinduism and all these pagan belief systems. But the politics of ecumenism then becomes, they say, and this began with Vatican II, they make that declaration, and then they say, well, because Christianity is the same as Islam, now we have to have Muslims running for office. We have to have Muslims in Congress. We have to have Muslim mayors, and they have to control the politics of the Christian world, or what had always been considered the Christian world. You see what I'm saying? So this is advancing politically the enemies of Christianity, the historic enemies of Christianity. So it's a form of invading our country and all the countries of the West, because ours is not the only one going through this. It's a form of invasion that's very systematic. It's very stealthy. It's deceptive. But at the same time, they don't have to fire a shot. You know, they don't have to actually raise up an actual army. Their army is this immigration system that they're, you know, infiltrating us with. So I think that's the number one issue. One, because of the gospel, and two, politically, it could lead to the disempowerment of Christianity in America and the Western world. And why is that important? Well, go look at the communist and the Muslim countries and how are they run. Do they operate on the principles of freedom? In my opinion, no, they don't. No, they don't. Christianity and God's law in the Bible is where the principles of liberty are taken from. So that's what I think is the most important thing. Now to my website, if you want to go, are you going to ask me a question?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we've got two main websites. One, we have our film site, which is at adullamfilms.com, A-D-U-L-L-A-M, films like the Cave of Adullam in the Old Testament. AdullamFilms.com, where you can see our documentaries. And then our radio website is NoiseOfThunderRadio.com, NoiseOfThunderRadio.com. And we have our weekly radio show, our podcast. So those are my thoughts, brother.
Well, I strongly agree with just about everything you said. I can't find a reason not to. As usual, Chris, when you and I start to have conversations, I have a pad and pen, and my pages keep getting filled up, you know, and I'll post a lot of the stuff that you mentioned in here in the description below so people can go out and look it up. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, get some of his DVDs while you can and educate the younger people of this world, of our generations, of what the past really was like so that we don't repeat it and it become our near future. But unfortunately, it appears that choice has been made for us. At least that's my dire opinion. So, Chris, thank you very much for coming on. Sorry, I got to cut it short, but we'll have you back on, and I'll be traveling down south, God willing, May 11th, to go and actually document this historic day, the ending of Title 42, and to see the madness that's going on the border. Mm-hmm. And if you and I are lucky, we may catch up down there and really see what's going on.
I know. I'm trying to figure out if I can. In fact, I'm already making some arrangements and calculations so I can meet you down, not on the 11th, but hopefully sometime afterward, before the 18th.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, what's going on the border is very serious, and it can actually change the impact of your way of life. And that is what these people from the New World Order, I don't care what you label them, that is the goal, is to completely circumvent everything from the Constitution and to turn this country into a socialist communist country. That's why we have socialists and communists now in Congress. So God forbid. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got right now. My name is Doug Thornton. This is Chris Pinto, and stay frosty. The enemy's out there. We'll see you next time. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, brother.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.